Hello, welcome to episode 20 from Stories from the VO Booth. I'm your host, voiceover trainer and voiceover talent, Tina Zaremba. Today I'm talking with talented Serena Brooke. Serena's background is in acting. She's a member of the radio acting company Live From Here, formerly known as the Prairie Home Companion, and she's a working voiceover actor. Listen in as Serena talks about the experience of radio acting, how she found voiceovers, and why she feels as talent, we're never done learning. Serena Brooke, thank you so much for joining me today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start off by asking you, how the heck did you find voiceovers? Because they don't talk about it in career night.
No, they do not. I'd always kind of been curious about it. You know, in college, I always thought, gosh, that'd be pretty sweet. And we did one workshop in college. Somebody came in and I was like, oh, that was really fun. And then kind of went to the back of my mind because I was doing theater and musical theater and stage work. And I was living in New York. And the only experience I had in New York with voiceover was my friend Robin, who works at John Marshall Media, where they do audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And so he had sort of a couple free casual workshops with some friends where he would come in, and he's a sound engineer there. Mm-hmm. And so we just came in, and he was so kind to just let us play in the booth a little bit with some audiobook stuff. And that was enlightening to just hear yourself back. And I was doing all of this projecting in the booth, and you know, I didn't know.
You're a voiceover actor.
Yes. I was like using all my stage training, and it was terrible, but it was really helpful to have that sort of very low key, friendly, open space to just play. And then when I moved back to Minnesota, where I'm from, I connected with an agent here, and then I really started to get into voiceover stuff.
So I just want to ask you a question. I did not know you studied in New York. Where did you study?
That was misleading. I actually went to college in Minnesota in Duluth, and then I moved to New York for 5 years, and I was working and auditioning and doing theater out there.
And how was that?
It was an adventure. It was great. I mean, it's that place is unlike any other place in the world, and that's like so cliche, but it's true. It's New York City. So the highs are high, the lows are low, and it all just mushes together. I can't believe I was there 5 years, because it just kind of feels like a blip now of crazy. But I did tons of theater auditions. I would do like, I don't know, 60 to 80 per season, you know, between like January to May or something. And I tried to keep a journal as much as I could of keeping track of everything. And, you know, I got to do some amazing shows and have some really wonderful experiences and meet some great people that I still am connected with. So for that, I mean, for that alone, it was worth it. I also met my husband in New York City, so it worked out.
Nice. Yeah. No, it's a magical city, obviously, because I feel that way because I live here, but yeah, it definitely, I mean, my first year in New York, I think I cried every day. I was like, oh my God, what am I doing here?
Oh yeah. A good subway cry. Like it's just par for the course. It's going to happen. And it's sort of a rite of passage, I think.
So did you record your voiceover demo here or when you got out to Minneapolis?
I started all that when I got back to Minneapolis. I actually didn't record my demo for like the first couple years that I was with my agent. And it just took me a while because I was still kind of thinking, you know, I'm a theater actor, I'm doing theater, and this is just kind of this other thing going on in the background. So I didn't really get as it sort of slowly became something I got more passionate about and got more serious about career-wise. And I recorded my demo here with Marshall Davis. Oh, funny, John Marshall Media in New York, Marshall Davis. That's I never made that connection. There must be something about the word Marshall.
So you had some voiceover jobs under your belt before you did your demo. Yes,
I did. And that's I used a couple of I think I just used the Caribou Spot, which was like my first, it was like baby's first voiceover job. I remember I recorded it at my agent's office because I still didn't have a home setup. And it was only like a few months after I signed with them, which was really lucky to get a job that quickly. And
yeah,
I just kind of felt like a little kid, like, okay, well, where do I go? I mean, I think this is how sort of green I was. And I went into the job and they were like, are you the VO? And I had never heard someone say that out loud. And I had to go in my head, VO, voiceover. Yes, that's me.
Well, I remember when I went on an audition for voiceovers and they're like, slate your name. I'm like, name. Okay. Tina Zaremba.
Yeah.
Weird to hear that.
Yeah. This terminology, business terminology, is such a fun, because each industry has it. And so you just learn it by being around it, I guess.
Yeah. So I'm curious, you having a background in theater, what's the big difference you saw between theater and doing voice acting? Because obviously having an acting background is helpful, but there is a difference.
Oh my gosh, yes. There really is. And I'm still honing that. I think it's a constant evolution. I think I really immediately had to just think smaller when I was in the voiceover booth, to keep the element of truth there always, because that's what all acting, I think, comes down to, whether it's film, TV, radio, stage, voiceover. It's all about truth. Like, I've learned from you in your class. I mean, it's such a good reminder constantly to honesty and connecting to honesty. So even if it's a broad character on a voiceover, or just a really basic commercial spot, it has to come from some honest place. And so I think that's a big connector and a big, you know, in the Venn diagram of theater and voiceover, truth is right smack in the middle.
And then what's the difference, though, is that you're not speaking to an audience member in the like 800th row, right?
Exactly. It's very personal. It's super intimate. And so I think honing into that intimacy and imagining just that one single person you're talking to helps. And also just technically there's differences. I mean, like not popping your peas and all the sort of technical aspects and how the mic picks up everything, every tiny little thing. And if you're on stage in front of, you know, a huge house, it's easier to hide certain things that might happen, or little slip ups, and the audience might not have any idea. And then with voiceover also, you have the editing aspect where you, especially with auditions or work you do at your home studio, you can edit, you can do as many takes as you want. On stage, if you forget your words, you know, I mean, that happened to me once. I was singing a song in a musical and everything left my brain except for the melody. So words were gone, blocking was gone. And thankfully, I had to be playing a really delirious character at the moment. And so it kind of worked to just kind of skip around in circles with some la-la-las. it was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. Yeah, voiceover has rarely had that level of terror involved.
But you know what's nice about theater, doing live theater, is I used to do solo shows, and or even when I did theater, I remember feeling that charge you would get from the audience, right? Just feeling their energy as well. You don't have that in voiceovers. You really have to invest in either the story that the writer's given you or your own story that you connect to.
Yeah, that's such a good point. You have to find the energy in yourself, and there isn't that synergy that is only, you know, given by an audience. What was your solo show that you did?
Well, I did solo shows about, let's see, I did one called To Pee or Not To Pee. I know. And it was about this corporate job that I ended up, this experience I had at a corporate job where they wanted me to take a drug test. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, to pee in a cup.
Right.
And it was at a theater, a Broadway theater, this security company also having a side business of drug testing. And I asked the security guard if I could walk out on the stage. And I remember standing on the middle of that stage being like, oh my God, I moved to New York for theater. And I'm now like going in that bathroom to pee in a cup to get a corporate job. What has happened?
That's the perfect title for that show. That is awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. So here's a question for you. What would you say, and I've got to give props to Michael Schwengel, who we both know. He's a friend of mine, a friend of ours, and one of my voiceover students. He asked Beth Chaplin and I what our voiceover actor spirit animal is. And I'm curious what yours is.
It's a flamingo because I was trying to hone in on an image of sort of how I feel when I'm kind of in the zone and feeling good about something I'm doing at the mic. And there's something about the image of this creature standing on one leg, perfectly still, with balance was the word I thought of. There's a level of relaxation you have to find to bring the amount of truth that you want to a piece of copy. But it also takes a lot of strength and balance to just like, I don't know what it is about this flamingo. And it's just like bright and pink. And I and I like to do bright characters and infuse copy with characters with a brightness and a joy. So I don't know, something about that flamingo. I think I need a picture of a flamingo now to put in my booth.
I love it. And I think you do. How do you find your voiceover work right now? Is it through agents? Is it through, I don't know, marketing yourself?
It's a combination. I have my agent here that has helped me find voiceover work locally. And then I'm on a pay-to-play website and I'm constantly learning more about those and about how to sort of pick and choose what is worth your time and energy. And then I also, this class of yours that I took recently has inspired me to market myself, just send emails out and find potential clients instead of just waiting for them to appear. Because it's been great. I mean, I wrote a few radio stations just to say, here's my demo, if you know you need promo work, whatever, and got a response of, we'll put you in our files. And I mean, that's something I would not have done before. And now I feel like, oh yeah, why not? And then I've also reached out to some clients I met pay to plays and have recurring work with them now separately, which is great.
I think it's so important, as you know, we've talked about marketing ourselves in a way that wasn't feasible 10, 15 years ago, and is so important now because of technology to stay at the forefront. I always say that agents and managers take 10 to 20%. So we should be doing 80 to 90% of the work then.
Yeah, that's such a good point. No, I agree. And I feel like, especially now that it's become more of a career for me, I think there's just no excuse. You just got to do the work. And if you get a job, it's so easy to be like, well, I'm not going to do anything the rest of this week because I'm good. And it's like, no. You got to just forward momentum, because if you stop, then the work stops.
So I want to talk about, I know you are on Live From Here, formerly known as A Prairie Home Companion.
Yes.
How did you land that job? So cool.
Thank you. It's a dream job. I mean, in every sense. It was through my agent, actually. It was a job they got sent because they were looking for a new voice for the show when Chris Thiele took over as host. I recorded it in, at the time, what was my little walk-in closet studio at my old apartment. And they had a few little snippets of scripts from the show, and they asked for any impressions or silly voices at the end. And I threw in Bernadette Peters singing a lullaby. So then they had me come in a couple weeks later, and I did an hour-long table read with the whole crew was there. I mean, Tim Russell and Fred Newman and Chris, and it was on stage at the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul. We were sitting at this table with mics, and Rich Dorsky was playing piano. It was so out of body because I had never met any of these people, but I'd listened to the show growing up. And so I felt like I was listening to the show and in it. It was so weird.
Oh my God. So I have to ask a number of questions, but before I do, why don't you explain to our listeners tell them what A Prairie Home Companion, now known as Live From Here, is, because some people might not know.
Yes. Oh my gosh, of course. Prairie Home Companion was a show that was on since the 1970, I want to say. Garrison Keillor was the host, and it was mostly spoken word, a lot of bluegrass folk music. It was a really special thing for a lot of people. And like I said, I listened growing up. It was a variety, 2-hour variety show. And Garrison retired a couple years ago. Chris Thiele, he's this incredible virtuoso mandolinist and musician and composer. He's a genius. He's the front man of Nickel Creek and Punch Brothers. And so he's in the music world primarily, but he had guest hosted a couple times and had been a guest on Prairie Home for sprinkled in throughout the years. And so Garrison picked him to take over the show. And so he did that in 2016 in the fall. Since then, we're in the middle of our second season now. It's grown, it's changed. And then we have a new title, Live From Here. You know, it's still a variety show, and it's still that kind of magic radio feel. There's a lot more music and there's a lot more eclectic music. So like Jack White was on the season premiere last year. And I mean, Steve Martin and his band has been on, and, you know, Regina Spektor and all these.
Do you meet all these people?
Yeah. I mean, I get to at least cross paths a little bit and say hello to most of them. And I mean, that's one part of why it's such a dream, because I get to witness and my ears are open to all this amazing new music. There's bluegrass, there's classical, there's indie rock, there's rap. I mean, it's great. And there's also a stand-up comedian on each show to sort of fill more of the spoken word aspect that used to be on. And so they do like a 10-minute stand-up set and are often in the silly comedic scripts with us as well. It's truly a variety show because there's all kinds of things packed into 2 hours.
So how is this work that you're doing on Live From Here similar to the VO work you do on a day-to-day basis? And how's it different?
It's like sits right in the middle of everything, because I get to do some singing on it too. So it's like this crazy combination of musical theater, stage work, voiceover, improv. I mean, it's like I never knew this job existed. That's the main difference, is everything on the show is a bit. So the characters I play, I feel like are a bit larger than life most of the time, but they still have to have that level of intimacy that voiceover work has. Because like I said, the mic picks up everything. And so it can tell if you're lying, and people can tell if yeah. It's not coming from truth. So even though they're these giant characters or silly characters, I mean, I play like this old lady named Dolores Dunphy, and she likes to prepare all these crazy recipes for her husband. Like, and she takes leftover decorations from holidays and makes like Christmas tree stew and makes her husband eat it. And she's just kind of nuts. But like, she has to be a real person to me, because if she's not to me, then she wouldn't be to the audience. So yeah, truth always comes back to that.
Do you feel like you have your foundation and you're done, or do you continue to focus on growing yourself as an artist?
I don't think anyone's ever done. I think I have this incredible job that sort of appeared out of nowhere. And because of that, I don't want to settle. You know, I don't want to just sit and go, okay, well, I'm good. So, I mean, that's why I took your class. That's why I want to keep challenging myself. Even in the world of doing the show, you know, I'll occasionally get to sing a musical theater tune for this musician birthdays segment. And I'm often thinking like, oh no, that song would be way too vulnerable and scary to do on the air. And then I think, no, I just got to like work on it. And I just got to do the scary thing. I think pushing yourself to do new scary things, even if you have all the vampires in your head telling you not to, it's important. It's important because the payoff is twice as big. Then you can feel twice as proud of yourself, and you have twice as much energy to keep going if you just do the scary thing.
Oh my God, I love you. And I absolutely could not agree more. I heard someone say once, you know you're growing when every day you've done something where you're a little scared and you're out of that comfort zone of just, you know, being in the malaise of life and going on autopilot, which can be so easy to do sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I mean, what you do with teaching, like teaching is a scary, vulnerable thing for me. And I've done a little of it with theater stuff and with high schoolers. And just today I'm doing a scary thing that I'm really excited about, but kind of scared, because it's a group of special needs adults and in the same group with high school theater kids. And we're going to do a theater workshop for like a few weeks. I think it's going to be really special. You know, it's like, oh gosh, I got to find acting games and things we can do that everyone's going to feel fulfilled by. And so, and I think, you know, it's one of those things you get really nervous for. And then once it's happening, it's wonderful and amazing. So
I want to close with Maya Angelou says, words mean more than what is set down on paper. It takes the human voice to infuse them with deeper meaning. So with that, what do you hope your overall voice conveys in life and in your work?
It's a big question. Joy is the first word that comes to mind for some reason. I feel like in this world we're living in currently, it's so important. And with the show, I think it's easy to go, oh my gosh, there's so many other people in the world doing doing viscerally important things and we're just like making these silly voices and what are we doing? And then I think about joy and I think about hope and how much it's necessary for people to have that, even for just a couple hours. I think that's where I find my driving force for this is the need to spread light in a dark time. Yeah. So,
love it.
Yeah. That's about what I could say. I mean, like last of the show I got to do, it was the Saturday after the election and it was a weird time for people. And we did a show in Philadelphia and it was beautiful. And this incredible singer from Africa, Angelique Kidjo, was on and she was incredible and joyous. And then there was, it was just this perfectly balanced show of meaning and leaning into all the feels and then also just celebrating life, because what else can you do? Afterwards, we were out at a restaurant and a group that was at the show left us a note on a napkin that just said, thanks for the hope. And it was like, oh, that's what it's all about.
That is awesome. I love it. Oh, yeah. Serena, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. You are such a light.
Oh, you too. Thanks for listening to me blab on.
So wait, how can people learn more about you? You have a website, yes?
I do, yeah. SerenaBrook.com. And then livefromhere.org is where all the...
Thank you so much. I so appreciate you.
Yeah, of course. Appreciate you too.
Stay tuned next week for episode 21, where I'm talking with the exceptional voiceover actor and human being, Kay Bess. I met Kay at VO Atlanta, where she spoke about finding your authentic voice, and we're going to continue that conversation in episode 21. Until next time, here's to owning our voices.